that people are not.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
Global Focus with guest Mike Cleland, investigative researcher, writer, and artist. Mike's blog website can be found at hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. This with tonight's guest, Mike Cleland. Trish Sheridan speaking here. A Global Focus with website at globalfocus.com airs live on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network with anchor station UPRN 105.7 FM New Orleans. Check UFOParanormalRadio.com for the several listening venues for the network's programs. Thanks to Joe Montaldo, UPRN network owner and ICAR international director, for making these broadcasts possible. Also, welcome to the listeners at Mike Cleland's great website, Hidden Experience, found at hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. And I think that the podcast tonight will be posted there as well. I'm not sure. But if so, that's great. And by the way, Mike, we've really been appreciating hearing your past interview with Melinda Leslie, which just aired now on the network, just concluding about 20 minutes ago. Wonderful interview with Leslie there, Mike, with our Melinda Leslie, great researcher. Now, let's focus on tonight's guest. Mike Cleland is an investigative researcher, writer, and artist. Mike analyzes important field questions with clarity and insight and has created a great blog site, Hidden Experience, at hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. I look forward tonight to discussing with Mike his quest for information in multi-aspectual fields, including the spiritual and metaphysical, ufology, and the extraterrestrial subject. Mike, thanks for joining us this evening. I've had that opportunity to review many of your articles and podcasts. Very thought-provoking site, interesting work. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know, Mike, I consider you one of the pioneers in this field, and not only is your quest to find answers, personal answers, general field answers, you're hoping to provide vital information to experiencers and the community at large. That's much to be commended. And, you know, tell me how you would like this interview to progress, Mike. I've learned a great deal about your interests from your fine podcasts and your articles. I could reference questions to past podcasts of yours, or what would you prefer?
However you want to do it. If you want to reference previous stuff that I've either written or talked about on a podcast format, just please feel free to do so. I'm sure I'll remember pretty much anything you bring up.
Well, you know, just off the bat here, I'd like to reference that excellent interview I just heard now between you and Melinda Leslie. You know, Melinda has been such a strong advocate in the field for her research areas. She's a wonderfully articulate experiencer. And, you know, I noticed just a comment you made in the interview as well, that she's very, very helpful at disseminating information to experiencers who have questions. I myself was able to ask her a couple of, well, important to me, when I encountered her at that International UFO Congress last year at Scottsdale, where I plan to also be this coming February as well. But now, Mike, let's turn, if we could, to your most recent interview. Boy, that too was excellent, with Whitley Strieber. To me, Whitley conveys wonderfully that challenge aspect of these experiences and the importance of new developments in understanding of the visitor topic. Just off the top, some of your impressions on your interview with Whitley.
Well, thanks for saying that. One of the things that was very nice about talking with Whitley is he's a very, very skilled speaker, so it made my role very easy, because he was, you know, you could just ask him a question and he could roll in a way, you know, very much like, you know, from a deep level of personal experience, as well as a lot of research over the last 25 years of looking into this. The thing that I was, I had just read the book. I had just finished his new book, which is titled Solving the Communion Enigma. And one of the things I was happy about when I did the, actually published that I found an interview that he had done in 1987, which would have been directly after the publication of the original book, Communion. And you can sense in his his demeanor in that interview that he was is just as confused in a way now as he was then as to the ultimate meaning and to the ultimate source of what this may or may not mean. And that to me, you know, I purposely put that short little, it's like a 3-minute clip at the end, just to hear that, that the sort of tenor in his voice is still coming from a very deep place of questioning.
That's a good point there. And, you know, Mike, I too was struck by the fact that he's, Whitley is continuing to unravel further mysteries in this field. Now, let me know here if I remember correctly. Did I correctly understand, Mike, that Whitley believes that there might be a type of evolution of human consciousness underway? Whitley does bring great analytical abilities to these matters, and so too his wife, Ann Streber. She apparently has contributed some really vital research findings to this conclusion. And there's even a discussion there of the fact that encounters could possibly change the brain through creation of more synaptic connections, and that also some of these changes could be reflected in the human DNA. Did I understand that correctly? Because if so, wow, that's a major development.
Well, that's came from a reference that his wife Anne had found, where mm-hmm. she had found a study done, I'm not sure by who, which they took subjects, had them read, I believe it was an essay by Kafka, or a short story by Kafka. Before reading the essay, they did a series of intelligence tests and problem-solving tests, and then they had them read this purposely absurd Franz Kafka short story. Afterwards, they did a similar series of tests, and the conclusion was that being confronted with the absurd somehow changes the brain physiology in a way that actually makes one perform better on these what amount to intelligence and problem-solving tests. So you take that a few steps further, and looking at the UFO phenomena, as crop circle phenomena, as well as ghost phenomena, and we are somehow at the very fringes of our society being confronted with something that's plainly absurd to try to figure it out with any amount of depth, and so his summation is, or his current hypothesis is that that somehow or another the UFO phenomena, the abduction phenomena, the crop circle phenomena are all conjoined as one meta phenomena that is attempting to elevate our own problem solving and intelligence. And you know, we can then just go one step farther and conclude that it is actually changing and encouraging and shepherding our evolution and our human evolution. To what end, I'm not sure, but that would be his idea. And when I asked him about very, very high numbers of people who are claiming the abduction phenomena around the world, I don't want to even say, all I can say is that just from my cursory research, it seems to be a very high number. I mean, a lot of people are claiming this phenomena. And his conclusion would be that that this is happening for a reason. So these people will then be the leading edge of this evolutionary a change taking place in humanity.
Well, you know, those comments to me bring up 2 points here. First of all, we have a very bright researcher like yourself in the room, and I don't want to give his name because in a way we want to protect him and his family. He's mentioning now that I believe that he thinks as well that contact or his experiences might indeed have further improved his already clearly existing abilities, intellectual and science abilities. And the reason I want to give his name is because he has lovely children who also are outstanding in academics. And his further comment as well is that where he is now convinced that the contact experience is real, it's valid, that he's having sometimes problems interacting with non-experiencers. So those are very intriguing comments. Thank you. Also, Mike, you know, when you mentioned that evolutionary aspect, I remember in a great interview that DC journalist Robert Stanley had with Dan Sheehan, that brilliant attorney, that Dan thought that with the disclosure and with the appearance of ET, that there would be a new evolutionary step kind. So, boy, your comments there seem very profound, very, very apropos. You know, one thing that impressed me, too, about your research, Mike, is you believe that these experiences are a deeply personal nature as well. They can really impact on the person's inner core. And, you know, I thought that was very perceptive as well. I know here at ICAR, the International Community for Alien Research, there have been a number of aspects regarding experiences, regarding contact that would suggest a core pattern exists with these experiencers, but yet, and I think the other members here of ICAR, we have several in the room, would agree with me, each person's experience will be different, will be individual, because it will have the imprint of that person's particular cultural, social, mindset, or other factors. Would you agree with me there?
I would agree very strongly there. You know, it's not the... you know, it's hard to tell when you're talking about these little data points because, you know, they in essence, they are puzzle pieces. So I would say a great many of the puzzle pieces that make up the, let's just say, the direct contact experience or perhaps the abduction experience would be, you know, of an extremely personal nature where either... I would actually almost say more in the form of synchronicity, which I feel is a very... key component to this whole thing that often gets overlooked, the synchronicity aspect. And I think that synchronicity is just as profound a paranormal phenomena as the UFO abduction phenomena might be, simply because it is given, you know, the synchronicity by definition would be a coincidence with a profound personal meaning. And the synchronicity might be so, you know, would have to, you have to ponder it. You have to look at it. And it is, on its very surface, impossible. Some of the synchronicities that I've been involved with or some that have people have shared with me, you know, you would say like, ooh, that is potentially impossible to happen on its own. So there has to be some sort of guiding hand there. And the synchronicities, by their very nature, are often so personal that it's almost like describing a dream in a way, because in order to describe it properly, the person you're sharing it with may not completely understand the deeper meaning of that synchronicity. It seems to be a theatrical presentation tailored directly and specifically to one individual, the person receiving the synchronicity.
That's a very thoughtful comment there, you know, Mike. Lots of information. And, you know, with the occurrences of synchronicity, to me, they could possibly provide a confirmation of a personal concept or finding regarding experiences or contact. Mike, do you perceive synchronicity as, or synchronicity moments, or synchronous moments, or moments of synchronicity, rather, pardon, as validators of research paths, that you're on the right path?
You know, I think that's that is a very good way to look at it. You know, oftentimes the synchronicity may be fleeting and it may just be a small indication that you're on the right path. I think you have to be very cautious, and I know initially when I started being at the receiving end of some of these profound synchronicities that I felt like I was taking them too seriously. You know, I was so thunderstruck by the intensity of what I had experienced upon receiving synchronicity that I was at a loss to, you know, properly balance it, let's say. And, you know, I think that it's just maybe a little compass head along the path. So just a little, just a bearing on a, you know, if you're traveling on the ocean, you have no true bearing unless you have some sort of compass to work from. So similar when you're treading these very murky waters of a phenomena that defies an easy explanation. The synchronicity can be used as a tool to just nudge you in the right direction. And that's what I've definitely found from my own personal experience.
That's a great explanation. Thank you, Mike. And here we have a confirmation of a synchronicity from our California researcher, Rydell. She noted a new thing today about synchronicities, or syncs as she abbreviates them, at least in her experience. She had another mini wave of syncs in the form of precognition and syncs with others. The discovery is the number 11 thing happens also at the same time, so that must be linked. And also, I'd like Rydell and others' reaction as well to just a very powerful a set of synchronous events that you had with owls. Now, owls do have that recognition in the field as possible indicator attached. I myself, as a teenager, while driving rather slowly in a car with my parents, saw a large, very large white owl, which seemed too large and particularly observant to be the average owl, despite the owl's known hunter capabilities. It was just too unusual. Now, you have had some remarkable events of synchronicity with owls. Twice you saw three of them at a time within a week of each occurrence. You also witnessed these events with another person. You've had research findings from other accounts of people, too, who've really experienced some unusual observations in the vicinity of owls.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk for a long time about owls here. It's hard to know whether they're a synchronicity or whether they're a just like a little sign along the path. The owl thing really started where I was with a young woman. Her name is Kristen. I was with her. She has since moved, and we went out on a single night camping trip. I actually didn't know her that well, and we were camping. I live very close to Grand Teton National Park, and you know, in the summertime, the weather can be very clear and very nice. So we went out with very light packs, just planning to sleep out under the stars, do one night out, and then just turn around and hike back to the road the next morning. As we were sitting at sunset, and I have a small little camping stove, and I was just preparing dinner, an owl appeared flying above us, and then two owls, and then three owls flew above us. Now, this was happening right at the moment we were having a very in-depth conversation. This comes into play later in this story, but I'll jump ahead. So owls are very beautiful, and I'm so hyper aware of the having studied and sort of immersing myself in the UFO lore, that I was very aware of the screen memory avenue that this could be pointing to. So I was I feel quite certain that those were real owls. So I can say that with absolute confidence. But it got to the point, went down, and we laid our sleeping bags out under the stars, and we laid on our backs in a beautiful, clear Rocky Mountain evening, and the owls, which are very quiet the way they fly, would just fly across our faces and blot out the stars for just a fraction of a second. It was absolutely mystical. So after this camping trip, and there was we were both kind of like, wow, that was intense. So my friend was eager to camp again, and I try to do it as much as I possibly can in the good weather of the summer around here. And so less than a week later, we went out and camped again, and this time it was much colder, and we had a small tent, and the sun was setting, and I said, let's hike up to that small mound there. There was just a sort of a meadow, and then above the meadow was a small hilltop, and we could walk up there and get a view of the sunset, and then just walk back, and then the walking would make us warmer before going to sleep. So we walked up to this hilltop, and the sun was setting, and once again, probably 5 days later, three owls appeared, one after another. They flew around us, and they landed near us, and they were on tree branches, and we watched until it was simply too dark to watch anymore, and then we walked back to the campsite. And this time, to have it happen twice was beyond mystical. I was This was actually one of those synchronicities where I kind of felt like I lost myself a little bit in the intensity of it and was looking too deeply for some sort of meaning. Now, jump ahead, I think actually almost a year, and this woman, Kristen, had actually moved away from town, and I was emailing her, and I said, Kristen, do you remember what we were talking about when we had the owl experience, the very first one sitting there? I remember we were having a conversation. I remember at the time thinking the conversation was very deep. And she replied, oh, yes, I remember exactly what the conversation was. She said she remembered it very clearly. She said the owls appeared at the exact instant that she was trying to give her deepest, most heartfelt definition of what God meant. And so, you know, that, realizing that afterwards, you know, that certainly rings true. I don't remember it exactly, but I remember the conversation was getting very deep. You know, you add that to an already profoundly odd set of owl sightings, and what I come away with is that something, I don't know how to say it, something at work within the matrix of the universe, that's a kind of corny way to say it, but something is at work unknown to us that I felt was directly trying to either influence or communicate or just be a little nudge along the path that I was on. And I will also add that that was very early on in my starting to look into my own personal experiences that may or may not be associated with the UFO phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Very intriguing information there. You know, Mike, too, when you reference the owls, I'm thinking of that great interview you did with Alan Cavanis of the Cavanis Report. Alan has observed owl and deer, apparently at synchronous and unusual moments. And here, I'm reminded of that fine Canadian researcher and experiencer, Corinna Sables. She mentions in her book, The Collectors, an incident where while at the time while she and her family were having an experience, her neighbors, one of them at least, experienced the sighting of a deer in the neighborhood. It was an unusual deer and just unusual factors for that sighting. And just quick shout out here to someone in the room. His abbreviated nick is COP. He's a great policeman of Native American heritage. And I'm wondering if the owls or deer figures are a part of their tradition. I know our friend Cobb often mentions the importance of vision quests, but I don't know if you would care to answer that, Cobb. Now, Mike, I noticed, though, that not only are owls prevalent in the literature, but you were able to correspond with a gal through her blog who had seen about 30 owls in a meadow setting, in a circular meadow setting. Could you tell us something about that? I found that very intriguing.
This happened, and I know the date exactly. This happened on October 3rd, 2009, and I know that very specifically because, and I'll, this is an important part of the story. I had made an appointment almost a month before with a psychic. Her name is Marla Freed. At that point in my life, 2009, which is only 3 years ago now, I was not at peace with this whole set of, you know, going down this avenue of research and partially my own experiences. But so I had sought out Marla Fries, and she is also one of the co-hosts on Whitley Strieber's Dreamland show, and she's what amounts to being their resident psychic, where she does interviews, you know, having to do with psychic experiences. And, you know, it was just going to be a phone interview. So a phone psychic session. And so I was all, I think I had paid up through PayPal, and I had, you know, it was for 1 o'clock on Sunday. So this would have been Saturday. And I was looking, curiously enough, there was a website. It has since changed names, but it's now called Synchro Secrets. At the time, it was called Synchronicity. So I actually stumbled on a website called Synchronicity. I found a blog post, and this is a husband and wife couple. Trish and Rob McGregor run this website now called Synchro Secrets, which is quite interesting, where they daily will post a synchronicity, oftentimes from readers, oftentimes from their own experience. This was posted by a fellow named Jim, and if I remember the story correctly, it was called The Owl and the Money Clip. And a husband and wife were having sort of an argument about money, and whether I think it was something over whether they should buy a new house, and he got all frustrated and said, I'm walking out of the house. So he walked out of the house. This was in rural Idaho, and he walked down to the stream that was near his house with his fly fishing rod and was fishing in the stream, and an owl flew over and dropped something shiny in the water. And when he investigated what was shiny in the water, it was actually a money clip with his initials on it, which, you know, I'm not even sure what that might mean. But, you know, that's a pretty profound experience. You've got, like, a money clip directly involved with the stress of money, and you've got an owl, and you've got his own initials. So I thought that story was so interesting, I was going to leave a comment. And whatever, this is now the modern age with the internet and everything like that. So I just scroll down to this blog, I get on the comment section, and I before leaving my own comment, I noticed a woman's face, just an attractive blonde woman, and she had made the comment that something to the effect of, I was in a meadow once, and it was surrounded by trees, and in those trees were over 50 owls, and she said it was the most mystical experience of my life. So at that point, I kind of ignored the previous owl synchronicity story and then jumped to this one, and I just clicked on her face, her little avatar, and then went immediately to her, what amounted to her website, and she had a small website where she was posting just creative writing essays. And I left a message, and I said, oh my gosh, her name is Stacy. I said, Stacy, this owl story is so strange, I want to hear more. And she immediately replies back, this is all on Saturday, this is all happening very fast, these emails are coming back fast and furious, and she immediately replies back, and she said, oh, you know, I wrote it up as a creative writing essay once, and I'll just post it on the blog. So the next thing I know is she gives me the link to the, you know, the blogger, and I read the essay, and it is this very strange story about being with this man named Christian, and being in this meadow, and seeing all these owls, and it gets, you know, it was very odd, you know, and I found I've since talked with her directly, and she did say it was a bird sanctuary, so, you know, there actually are a lot of owls there. But now so I say, wow, that was really incredible, that story, I just read it. And then she emails back immediately, and she said, oh, you know, the thing I didn't put in that essay is that on the drive home, Christian and I saw a UFO. And I was actually, my jaw kind of dropped, and I was like, I immediately emailed back to her, and I said, are you kidding? You saw a UFO? Do you know what my blog is about? My blog is about owls, UFOs, and synchronicities. And then she replies back to me, do you know who you should meet? You should meet my best friend, Marla. Marla Fries. You two would really connect. And that was, you know, approximately, you know, less than 24 hours before I had my own, you know, she had no idea who I was. This was less than 20 before I was about to talk to Marla Fries and, you know, have a psychic session. And that, that, so there's a synchronicity with UFOs, with owls, with psychics. Yeah, that one, including starting off at a website called Synchronicity.
Those are wonderful accounts. Thank you, Mike. Very informative. And, you know, before my next question, I just want to note some excellent room comments. First of all, from our policeman, cop from the Northeast, the abbreviated form of his nick here is cop. We think the world of him. And here's some great information. He's mentioning, Mike, that when you go on a vision quest and see an owl, you will get a name when you come back and receive much wisdom. He's also saying that each tribe is different in seeing the owl. It has different meanings, and also that most tribes, when seeing an owl, it signifies death or possession of the owl or feathers. But other tribes will hand an owl feather to another as a sign of friendship, as a means for friendship. And let me see here. And for the Cherokee, if one gives another, it means friendship. And really interesting. Thank you very much there, Cop. And also our great California researcher, Rydell, is mentioning the synchronicity of seeing Mothman and then the Mothman turn or morph into a UFO. And you've done, of course, an excellent interview with a gentleman who is an expert on Mothman. And I can't wait to discuss that as well. You know, one thing that I found really beautiful, Mike, in your interview with, I believe it was with Alan Abadesa Green, your commentary there that sometimes it's important when researching to go forward on a path that is new. You mentioned the importance that in the work of Joseph Campbell, or both of you did, in the work of Joseph Campbell, there's a great scenario on the Knights of the Round Table where each knight for his quest beforehand has to go to the darkest part of the forest and walk where there is no path, that an adventurer cannot be on a path. Oh, heavens, to have meaning, or you saturate, I think probably is the better way I should translate that. Please,
yes,
do
it's a metaphor.
Job translate it's a, yes, translate that better for me, please.
Well, you did very well. Yes, yeah, so the knights entered the forest, the darkest part of the forest, where there was no path, and that's where they started their adventure. So, in essence, that, when I was first looking into my own set of experiences, and this would have been about 2005, 2006, I was reading a lot of Joseph Campbell and listening to audio interviews and with Joseph Campbell. I have a collection of them that were that are, you know, really incredibly inspiring. But that metaphor, and I also would say, like, just a more modern metaphor for me in a way, is like to step off the map. Like, you have to throw the map away in order to have a true adventure. And this is, certainly seems to ring true, because logically, I should, you know, if I had trusted the logical side of my brain, where, you know, there is a path out there, right? You get a job, get a 401k, you do all these things that society, you know, tells you that you're required to do. And instead, at a certain point now, 5-6 years ago, I felt like I very consciously said, like, I am being presented with something. These synchronicities were very easy to decipher in a way, because they were certainly leading me down this path to look into my own set of experiences. And then, you know, throwing the map away to me sort of meant, like, I don't know how to say it, you know, you sort of have to just go screw it, you know, I'm going to follow this no matter where it leads and no matter what the consequences. And I actually feel like I've done pretty well we're in a newer chapter of modern history where, you know, going down this path, you know, Whitley went down this path 25 years ago, and his experience was brutal in the sense that he was publicly ridiculed. And now I'm going down this path, and I certainly have been ridiculed at times, but it has certainly been very minimal.
Thank you. No, very intriguing explanation there. Now, you know, Mike, as well, and I too am an admirer of Joseph Campbell, during that great interview with Abadesa Green, you both noted that really, it seems right now that presently the researchers in our field have more answers to these phenomena than the scientific and academic world. And you know, I was thinking of Grant Cameron's great article, the article is entitled UFOs, A Scientific Dilemma. And in that article, Grant Cameron indicates that some UFO researchers seem to be subcontracting their work to the scientific field, with problematic results. The UFO and ET subject matters are still not really openly discussed in scientific or academic forums. Mike, do you think that these important paraphysical and synchronous events really should be taken into serious consideration as an existing component, an existing full component of these phenomena?
Well, I certainly think they should be, because everyone comments on that. One of the things I've been doing over the last couple of years is just collecting you know, people's quotes, whether they write it out in an essay or whether they say it on a personal phone call that I've had with folks, I will write down what they say about synchronicities. And almost everyone universally says the same thing in one form or another, where they say, you know, these are signs along the path, or these are guideposts, or these are, you know, a compass bearing, or these are breadcrumbs. Everyone is saying the same thing, and I think that we're just recognizing what must be observably so. I think that probably everyone has synchronicities, and perhaps the people who are going down the path of, let's say, UFO research or paranormal research would be that much more open to looking at them. I know that Nick Redfern talks about this. Now, he says quite openly he's never had any kind of paranormal experiences that involve UFOs or Bigfoots or chupacabras and all the things he studied, but what he does have is profound synchronicities, and he has them in conjunction with the stories he's either writing or researching. And it's very interesting. He's a smart guy, and he is very aware of these things. So he, as does anyone, I think, with an open mind, he has the foresight to trust these synchronicities as a confirmation that he is proceeding correctly along this path, you know, what would be the path of his own research.
Well said. And, you know, Nick Redfern, I believe here you would agree, is just such a gentleman, a fine intellect, and he also is not following any prescribed agenda. He's open to all the research, to all the informational data, and he's just, to read his books is really just a joy. So many subject matters, most of them interrelate. It's really a great experience to read any of his work.
Agreed, yeah, and it's great to listen to him. I've had the chance to interview him, I think, 3 times on my show. And, and he's a delight. You know, he's one of those people that you can just, he's a very skilled speaker. I think that the English have, a leg up on us just having, you know, they invented the language. So I feel like I am in awe of any time someone from England, you know, goes on about something. I just find that I'm sort of smitten by their accent. So, yeah, just so his accent, I guess, his research, I trust greatly. Well, let's not say I trust it. I pay very close attention to it. I'm not quite sure what to make of anyone's conclusions. It seems like every single researcher out there has a completely different conclusion than the researcher, you know, next in line. And so, consequently, I have to assume that probably everyone is wrong a little bit, and probably everyone is right a little bit. And the game for me, or the challenge for me, is to sort of sift through those puzzle pieces that they're presenting, and try to sense which ones are fitting. And I find that at my core, I guess I work as an illustrator part of the time, and at my core, I feel like, you know, there's the creative side to me, the artistic side to me, and that is much better developed than, let's say, the analytical side of me. I do have that analytical side, though. I found as I proceed further down here, I just am more excited about the information I get when I follow my gut or follow my intuition. You know, now that said, what I will do is very clearly state, you know, like when I am doing that, I'll say things like, you know, I sense this is what might be happening, or I feel this is something that might be happening, rather than treat it as dogma or fact.
Beautifully said, and I heartily agree with you, including the special eloquence of the English and how much Nick Redfern's work is to be respected. There are several other researchers in the field, and you know, I think you very well said that, that each researcher has the duty of investigating the research and findings of those others in the field, particularly those who have demonstrated their interest and thoughtful analysis of the subject matter. But in the end, the conclusion regarding a person's experience and concepts has to be that individual's. Beautifully said. And just here, I just wanted to note this Mike, lest I forget it, our policeman, Cobb, has another interesting comment here. This time it's about the Zuni, a Pueblo tribe. After seeing the owl, they assume it's an embodied spirit, a member of the family clan, a religious or tribal leader who's just departed and who has returned to watch over the Zuni people and share wisdom and insights. Thank you very much, Cobb. Now, Mike, did I correctly understand it that you think perhaps now there has been a definite acceleration of ET experiences or even just synchronicities? And synchronicities, of course, a major factor there in these events and other paranormal events.
You know, it might just be the fact that I am only just starting to look into this in any amount of depth. And maybe we're just experiencing a new shift in the ease of communication with things like email and Facebook and the internet. I am certainly sensing, I was reading, over 20 years ago, you would read a book and the only way to do that sort of research was either to go to the library or the bookstore or maybe to listen to a late night AM radio show. There was no, there were a few little newsletters that had a little staple in the corner and would get mailed out a few times a year. But to keep up on this information, it was different back then. So maybe all I'm sensing is an acceleration in the availability of the information itself. That said, I certainly sense a grand acceleration of synchronicities in my own life starting around 2005, 2006. And then I have had other people say almost the exact same thing to me, that they sensed the same acceleration. I'm not sure what it may or may not mean, and this is right where I get into, I haven't done any like overt research where I've plotted this thing out, studied it with an academic grant or anything like that. But I can say that my impression is that there has been an acceleration in these stories. One of the things I've done through my website is I have been at the receiving end. It's a very modest website. I actually don't get that many hits per day or per week. But what I do get is people contacting me. So every day I'll check my email, and in most days of the week I will get a comment or a reply or a direct email to me, and it'll be someone telling me about their experiences. Oftentimes these people are sharing details that are oddly and curiously similar to my own, including this time period of about 2005, 2006, noting some form of acceleration in their own set of events. And maybe they're just finding me just because my information jives so tightly with their own information. That might be a very simple solution. So I don't quite know what to make of the pattern that I'm seeing.
Or this information now is becoming increasingly apparent to the general public as well. And also the factor, too, of dedication of study and being open to understanding this information and to observe it and also to analyze the other work of other researchers or investigators in the field. Now, our great California ICAR investigator, Rydell, is noting that when she's often in this room, this is the UFO Paranormal Radio Network chat room or discussion room on PAL Talk, she's reading books on UFO paranormal subjects, and she notes that her psi abilities increase. And, Mike, I don't know as if I can, I really couldn't have others vouch for me on this, but we had about 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, a room open that was in conjunction with the UFO Alien Phenomena Room, which still remains open to help any experiencers or contactees. But this one was sort of the advanced UFO Alien Room, or more or less no holes barred about encounters. And sort of, I began attending that room, and I think I may be an experiencer since childhood, but boy, the increase in events did occur. And I think the mind, too, when you focus on something and also when there is a heightened awareness, you can have an acceleration of events. And, of course, too, this might be a time when there will be an apex of experiences and full disclosure. Who knows?
You know, I've sensed that too, in sort of anecdotally, other people have told me that same kind of thing, you know, just the getting together. And that's one of the things I sort of enjoy about the going to conferences, is that there's an odd, like, heightened sense of energy. And maybe there's just a giddy excitement that, you know, people with such what might be considered fringe hobbies or fringe dedication to a subject would all be a meeting in one place. People would get all giddy, and I think that there is a collective power to that that sense of excitement. So yes, I would agree that there's heightened experiences. They may be very slight. They may just be, you know, cute little synchronicities. The implication is that if all of us, like a big set of experiencers all got together and chanted on a mountaintop, and I don't want to sound too new agey, there quite possibly could be, you know, you could get very good results. I don't know what those results might be. You know, you might come down off a mountaintop and nothing would happen, but later on in each of those individual lives, they might all experience some sort of synchronistic event.
You know, that's beautifully said, too. Mike, during your interview with Whitley Strieber, Whitley seemed to suggest that the aliens wish us to acknowledge their existence. But Whitley also thinks that mass exposure could be disruptive to the populace. Do you agree with that, or do you think this is a progression that is occurring well within the norms of social acceptance or possible social adaptability?
You know, the disclosure debate is something I am so reticent to get involved in, simply mm-hmm. because the you look in Webster's on the definition of alien doesn't have anything to do with something from another planet. It is something so unusual as to be incomprehensible. That is one of the definitions, and that's when I use the term alien. That's kind of what I'm getting at. If disclosure did happen, I have no idea. Well, disclosure is one thing. That would be where, you know, somebody in authority says, you know, the UFO presence that we've been denying all these years is, in fact, you know, a reality. That's something else. So disclosure is one thing, you know, and that's its own can of worms. But the actual appearance in the actual, if these visiting entities showed up en masse, whether it was, I don't think it's going to take the form like it does in science fiction movies of giant motherships hovering over, you know, 10 of our planet's biggest cities. I think it will be profoundly stranger than that, and that is something that Whitley Strieber, a writer and a writer of, you know, mysteries and horror novels, is very good at summing up. And his perception, which is as whole as any I've ever come across, is that instead of, you know, looking out the window and seeing a bunch of UFOs, it might be more like a veil is lifted or a wall is removed that separates us from this unknown set of experiences. I shared an experience with Whitley, and I think I shared it with Gia Scott when I spoke on her show some months ago, but I had an experience where I looked out my bedroom window. This would have been 1992. I sat up in bed. There was a bright light streaming in the window. It was late at night. It was wintertime. There was snow on the ground. I saw five, what would be the classic spindly, big-headed gray aliens with the big black eyes, standing very close to the window. They were kind of a little off to the side, walking towards the house, and they were backlit by something very bright. I never could quite figure out what was light when it was lighting them from the background. But now I sat there, I looked, I had a distinct, whether it was my own voice in my head or whether some projection, I can't answer that, but I did have a very distinct voice in my head that said, now is the time to put your head on the pillow and shut down, which I did. I just obeyed. I sat down. Now, what accompanied that experience, which may have lasted only 20 seconds, was a profoundly bizarre sensation. And this sensation is something that I ask other experiencers about, and some of them know what I'm talking about, and some of them don't have the same experience. But it is a sensation of things are very quiet, and things are vivid in a way that seems dreamlike would be the wrong way to try to describe it. But things are hyper vivid in a way that seems like things are more real than real, and there is a hyper-focused feeling that feels like the everyday chatter inside your head, it feels like that knob that controls that is turned down. And this feeling was very strange, and I've had it only two other times, and each time I recognize it immediately. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that just being in their presence, if that's what I'm to assume that was happening, being in their presence was so disrupting to my own definition of reality, or my own ability to perceive reality. It feels like it was distorted in a way that that I experienced for 20 seconds, and consequently the actual trajectory of my life has changed because of that very brief experience. Now, if this is a long-winded thing, I'm going to get back to your question. If the alien visitor otherworldly presence made itself known en masse, I don't know what would happen to the collective psyche of the planet if suddenly everyone experienced that that sensation. I don't know if that goes hand in hand with them just being close by or not. But all I can say is that the actual that sensation was so disorienting and disrupting that I don't know quite what to make of it. You know, Stephen Bassett, who is very dedicated and very passionate about his cause, I don't know if he's factoring in these entities actually showing up and how disrupting it can possibly be. You know, disclosure is something different than they're here. If that all made sense.
No, that's a very powerful description, and I'm so glad you shared that. I had read a reference to some aspects of that on your blog, and everyone here in the room very much appreciates those comments. You know, Mike, we have our West Virginia ICAR state director noting that brief experience could represent the tip of an iceberg, and our former New York ICAR director referencing, and also an excellent researcher, referencing that really all Hume's point could represent only the tip of an iceberg. And I can't wait to rejoin this interview, rejoin this discussion. It'll be about 7 minutes from now. And in the interim, I suggest that everyone check out Mike Cleland's excellent blog website at hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. We'll be right back, so don't go away.
Thank you. Paranormal Radio Network. JCOM is watching.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I will tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we have all sorts of guests. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Hello, everyone. Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Come join us each Friday evening at A Global Focus's new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Hi, I'm Second Medium Chris George.
And I'm Stephanie Vanetti. Second Medium, are you sure about that, Chris? It's more like Psychic Expert Lodge.
Yeah, real funny, Vanetti. Then again, being my girlfriend, you would know. Together, we are Second Sight NYC, a parapsychic radio show based out of New York City.
Join us each week as we journey into the unknown. Let's cross the threshold of reality together.
We take a fun and no-nonsense approach to our show, and we love to interact with our audience. Each week, you can expect a great guest, interesting topics, and strong opinions by myself and Stephanie.
As well as Rabbit's psychic dream interpretations and the gemstone of the week. And don't ask us a question that you don't want an answer to.
Give us 2 hours of your time to inform, enlighten, and entertain you. Let the journey begin.
Join us.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. With your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Back to A Global Focus with guest Mike Cleland, investigative researcher, writer, and artist. Mike's blog website can be found at hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. A great interview with Mike Cleland. Mike Cleland's website at his excellent blog site, Hidden Experience, at hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. Excellent material there. And just here at the beginning of the second hour, I just wanted to remind everyone of the excellent programs here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Just earlier this evening, we heard Mike Cleland's great interview with Melinda Leslie. We have, for example, on Wednesday evenings, UFO Undercover from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Thursday evenings, Second Sight, New York City. with Chris George and Stephanie Benetti. Excellent show from 8 to 10 p.m. Central. And on Fridays, Through the Keyhole with our researcher, Karen Dolan, which broadcasts immediately before this program, usually from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. Now, really want to return to that island account there, very, very powerful vignette there, or account rather. Mike, I just had a very quick comment here in the room, and I think that this might have been referenced during Whitley's interview with Whitley as well. That is the unusual sounds being heard across the globe. And we actually have three people in the room who have heard these sounds, one from the New York area, one from West Virginia, and another, and I'm not sure there of the exact location, but there's been some discussion.
Oh, you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Okay, yes,
yes.
She just broke down for just a second. Oh, as far as I've only looked a little bit at sort of YouTube videos. Now and I have heard, in fact, Whitley himself said he had heard these some sort of odd set of sounds. I don't know quite what to make of it. You know, there's a term Fortean, there's a fellow Charles Fort who was doing research about 100 years ago into this type of phenomena, and or basically just odd phenomena, including, the classic one is like frogs falling from the sky. I don't quite know what to make of the odd sounds. Now, one of the things that at a gut level, it's creepy, right? The sounds are kind of creepy and scary. On a more pragmatic level, these things on YouTube would be very simple to hoax. That said, there's people coming forward saying, they heard them. You have people on the chat site that are saying that. I don't know what to make of it. It would be, whatever. It's the very month of 2012, and these sounds seem to be making an emergence right now. It would be very easy to go down that avenue and just get kind of lost in speculative maybes. So I don't have any good idea of what it may be. It is interesting, and there is something, I don't know how to say this, I enjoy a scary movie, I enjoy science fiction, so in a way, these stories have a sort of seductive quality to them. They are very interesting and very moody to try to, to ponder these stories. So, it does have that spooky, moody quality to it that I find myself drawn to, but I have no idea what it may or may not mean, or what might be at the source of it.
No, that's a very good response. I agree. Intriguing phenomenon, one to be watched. At this point, we really don't have the answers, but again, very, very intriguing. Now, Mike, as well, I wanted to, lest I forget, mention the topic of dreams, lucid dreaming, and sometimes the effect of encounters being manifested through dreams. We even have some people here in the room, I bet, who would like to discuss it. Have you found in your research that dreaming indeed can be a type of conduit for communication, as sometimes the synchronicities may be? And would that be from ET?
This is so interesting, because everyone that I've talked to who's had this direct experience, and I don't know quite, now here I'm just going to sort of try to weasel out of being, of my own identity maybe. I'm not sure what I'm going to try to say here, but I'm very cautious to give myself a label. I know I've spoken with Joe Montaldo, who's listening right now, and, he didn't quite come out and say anything that is, like what he might think was at the core of my experiences. I have some puzzle pieces on the table that if you looked at them, they would, you can infer the piece that's missing. And that piece that's missing, you might be able to infer that would be sort of contact or abduction event. I recognize that very clearly, that those that it's easy to make that inference. That said, I don't have the direct experience, so I'm just very cautious to say that. What I do have is the direct experience of some high strangeness that somehow seems to be overlapping a little bit with the UFO lore. So so I just wanted to get that out of the way because I'm very cautious to avoid being called a UFO abductee, where some people have called me that, and I just jump in and say, you know, that that's not what it is. Now, to the subject of dreaming, the people who have who claim the firsthand accounts, whether that be abduction or contact or however you want to say it, those people will also share stories of very profound dreams. And I feel like I have had some dreams. And one of the things that this blog format is for me a very public way of documenting sort of my ongoing journey. I guess this is an easier way to say it. And I have documented some dreams. One dream that is very interesting that ties into the experience I shared earlier about sation I felt when looking out the window at night where the bright light was shining in. I had a dream, and this is very much a dream. It felt like a dream. It happened at night. I woke up. It was very dreamlike. At the same time, it was a little clearer and a little more vivid than what would be the average dream. So I definitely pay attention to it. And in this dream, I was visiting my brother, who's a little bit older than me, and I was at his house, and he kind of said, "Hey, Mike, you might want to check this out. Here, follow me. I'm going to show you something that I have in the garage." And I'm like, "Sure." So I follow him into the garage, and there is a small flying saucer, partially dismantled, sitting in his garage. And I'm like, "Where did you get this?" Now, just be aware, this is a dream, everyone, so don't try to think this is real. But I said, "Where did you get this?" And he said, "You know, I don't know, I had some contact, some guy worked for the government, he had it, and he needed me to take it off his hands, so I figured I'd store it for a while." So I said, "Wow, this is so cool." And then he said, "Be careful, if you get too close to it, it distorts reality." And I was like, "Really?" And so sure enough, I walked close to it, and if I, you know, so just imagine a little flying saucer about the size of a what would be a normal garage in the suburbs, and I walked close to it in the dream, and in doing so, I experienced that exact same sensation that I described earlier. It was weirdly quiet. It was distorted. It felt like the normal chatter of my mind just got turned off, and then I would back away, and that distorted feeling would disappear. I'd walk forward, and it would come back, and that pretty much was the end of the dream. But I had a series of dreams in 2008, 2009, which I refer to as reassuring dreams, and I documented these all on the blog, and these were dreams that somehow had something to do with the UFO phenomena, something that was scary, and then I would, in the dream, confront these experiences, and they weren't as scary as I thought. They were somehow reassuring. In this blog format with a way to label them and the actual act of writing them down and writing them in a way that's public, I found sort of forces me to be, I don't know, you know, like a fear and sort of, I guess the way to say it is I bumped into someone at a UFO conference and he sort of said, "Oh, what brings you here?" And I said, "Oh, you know, I'm doing research." And he said, "Oh, what are you doing research on?" And I didn't have a good answer. And what I said, which felt honest, is as I replied, "Oh, I guess I'm researching myself." And so when I say, you know, I'm documenting this stuff, and even including these podcasts that I do, I'm making sure that I'm doing it for personal reasons. I'm doing it for almost selfish reasons because I'm in essence researching myself. So that's when I document these dreams and put them online, I'm treating these dreams as if I'm doing research, and I try to keep that research at a very clear, lucid, and as serious as I can be level. If I guess that was another long answer.
No, it's a very thoughtful one. And again, Mike, I hope very much. I didn't mean to insinuate anything. I do know you're an excellent researcher. a fine intellect there, and you're really doing your best to inform both and the community, and very much appreciated. Now, two comments as far as that encounter there. Dream where you thought that humans wouldn't be able perhaps to adapt to the full presence of the other. Am I correct in saying this? I want to make sure I'm not.
Yes, that was it. Was less mm-hmm. a dream and more just an avenue of speculation. Just having mm-hmm. talked to enough people and had just some fleeting experiences that mm-hmm. were so profoundly confusing and perplexing to me. I just think that the grand experience would be, you know, extremely confusing and extremely perplexing to anyone involved with it.
Right, sort of the conjecture on the paradigm, and that shows you're a thoughtful researcher. You're seriously considering these matters. Have you ever, Mike, been concerned that perhaps the alien, even on a research basis, that the alien entanglement might represent very negative development for humans? For example, some past, I guess, on my program, Tiny Program, the great Canadian researcher and also a health official, Jim Maroney, has interesting research findings that the aliens are interested in the human brain and central nervous system. We've got Daryl Sims and his research group, the Sabre team, carefully researching implants of course Dr. Lear does as well. Daryl Sims's group has noted that there may be a type that seeks to alter endorphin levels, the transmitters in the brain, and I guess Dr. Lear has really come up with fascinating information about some of the components of these implants. And lastly, Nigel Kerner really had an intriguing book on the fact that he thinks that the aliens, the present aliens on the planet, and here he's not typecasting all aliens, but he's concerned that present alien interaction
Oh, did I lose you?
In biological form. Hopefully not. Can you hear me, Mike?
I hear you now. Yes, you just dropped off for just a second. So yeah, you're back.
You know, and that's probably just too long, too rambling a question on my part. Do you sense anything negative from the advent of the aliens, or just naturally?
You know, I feel like I could go down that, just depending on which way the wind blows sometimes, I feel like I could go down that avenue and you know, think that these are extremely malevolent, evil demons. You know, I mean, there's certainly stories that I have heard, firsthand stories from people, as well as stuff that I've read in books, and sure, you know, that is a very real possibility. At the same time, I've heard absolutely wonderful, dreamlike, angelic experiences that are just as convincing and just as powerful. I don't have a good answer to that. I have one experience that where I felt such a profound sense of terror, something that I've never, ever experienced before, and that I have to say... you know, is something I've never had to deal with, and I know other people who say that they deal with that routinely. So I don't have a good answer. Maybe, but the one thing that if they, whoever they might be, were here for demonic reasons, you know, that would sort of go into Nigel Turner's thing that they're here to reap something from us, the same way that we would, you know, go into the fields and reap the grain. They are here to, you know, to get something from us on a long-lasting basis, instead of just, you know, taking over the world, zapping us with their ray gun, and just taking it all at once. And I've, you know, definitely heard the conjecture that whether certain entities are feeding off of our emotions, especially our dark emotions, whether that be fear, and I've certainly had people talk about sexual emotions too, that seem to be very powerful and seem to play a role in these experiences. So yes, so there's my answer. Is I don't know, but I definitely have heard, you know, both sides of the coin. It's probably more complicated than something simplistic that they're evil. And I don't quite know what that might mean, but that would be my answer.
Very thoughtful response. And to me, that's perhaps a full spectrum response. You know, I too have felt some very powerful synchronicities in this field, and I would also state that I'm an experiencer, just to make it more understandable to the listeners. Just briefly, two very strong synchronous patterns with two different types of groups and concepts as far as the UFOs. The first would be with Joe Jordan's group and the Name of Christ to help during some encounters. I have found that's actually worked with Grays, and I've been told that not all Gray groups are negative, so that's intriguing as well. And also, I can't say I'm the most wonderful of human beings, but I've also had two fellow researchers say that they too have witnessed this. I noticed strong synchronicities at that time. Also, I have to say that at that time, I received some great assistance and friendship from people at ICAR. They've always been there for me. And I think that's one reason I treasure their friendship, and I treasure their advice so very much. But now, another synchronicity would be with a different group, that there's a full spectrum in this subject matter, and that would reflect the writings of Charles Hall, who wrote the Millennial Hospitality series. And I and a fellow researcher experienced quite powerful synchronicities in two visits to the Nevada area researching the tall white subject matter, and there are several reports that others have been experiencing synchronicities as they do research these tall whites.
Yeah, I have not followed the Charles Hall story. I've only heard him interviewed a few times, so I'm very unfamiliar with that. Though it is interesting, and there is a report, if I'm not mistaken, of like tall whites literally walking around a casino in Las Vegas. Am I remembering this correctly?
Yes. Yes. Very
yes.
Much
so, so I don't know anything about that, but once you go down this avenue, it seems like that anything's open, right? You know, like once, mm-hmm. you know, like how do you put a stop measure on what's too weird? You know what I'm saying? If you are looking into this and you're honest and you're open-minded, you have to be open-minded to everything. That said, you should be skeptical and cautious not to believe everything. But I feel like that once you go down this road, like any phenomena is open for interpretation, especially. In the lore of the UFO field, I just am very cautious to say that a story is just because it's too strange doesn't mean it's not it doesn't have some validity to it.
No, I can appreciate that response. And too, Mike, I have to note as well, when we read Charles's work, we're very impressed by the very incredible nature and presentation of the material. We've also dined with both he and his wife on two occasions. But what was particularly intriguing was we did have a chance to visit the base there and the general area twice. And there were synchronicities occurring that were just very unusual. The one problem with synchronicities, of course, is that there's never any definite witness to them, but what we saw, yes, Rydell, Creech, Indian Springs, yes. Now there's a wonderful program going on there, so we haven't visited the base since, but we did visit it once. Let me put it this way, I think that there might be a great deal of validity in what Charles has said. I know that he sincerely believes it, and the synchronicities were just very, very unusual. Yes, Indian Valley Springs, right, Indian Valley there, that area. I'm sorry, I'm talking to people in the room.
Sure, sure.
But let's then turn to a different aspect. Mike, in your research, do you find that the interrelationship of encounter phenomena with archaeology, science, history, and other subjects further compels your research?
You know, I'm not that interested in the archaeology end of it. I think that other people are doing excellent research, and I find that that, you know, how to say this, you know, looking into ancient old papyrus scrolls or hieroglyphs on the wall of an Egyptian tomb, or that is all very interesting, and I'm fascinated by it on one level. But what I'm much more interested in, what's happening right now. It feels like there are people sharing stories, oftentimes online, oftentimes in real time. You know, there's certainly websites where you can literally click on someone's personal blog and they will tell of an experience that they had, you know, just, you know, hours or minutes before. So I'm, you know, those are interesting, though that's not really the avenue of interest or speculation that I'm really going down. You know, I follow it, I listen to it, I enjoy it, but for me the really hot subject, you know, hot meaning it has like a fiery life of its own, is, you know, what is happening right now with people, you know, sharing their own experiences. And you know, it's sometimes it's intertwined with those old archaeological studies and things like that. But you know, I just, my main interest is the here and now.
Well, powerfully said. You know, it is important to research and analyze the data, which you do. The actual personal experiences and observations are key, and they're really the ultimate guidepost for how you perceive the field at this time. And it is a very exciting time for ufology and ET studies and the paranormal fields as well. Would you say, Mike, that you feel that paranormal fields are inextricably linked to the other phenomena? Being ufology or ET, or perhaps present a tantalizing possibility of linkage.
You mean to like ghost phenomena and ancient,
yes.
You know, ghosts and crop circles and orbs and yes, to me they are all one meta phenomena. They are all interlinked. You know, and this, you know, Bigfoot and Mothman and synchronicities, and they're all interlinked somehow, and I don't know quite what that means. And I just feel like we are trapped in this three-dimensional world, and these things seem to be bleeding over from some other realm in a way that is perhaps impossible for us to even properly define. We need to go to the metaphor to try to explain it, because a literal explanation, just, you know, we may be incapable of explaining it, the same way that the little glowing fish at the bottom of the ocean can't possibly attempt to explain the mountain goat. It would be impossible for it. They're just in two separate realms. Though, you know, somehow or another, those two could interact. Maybe in some laboratory somewhere. But you know, so I feel like we, you know, we're trapped in this reality, and something is bleeding over from another reality, and that would include the crop circles and the orbs and the many of the UFO accounts and psychokinesis and psychic abilities and lucid dreaming. All these things seem to be, you know, interwoven to me.
This is a very intriguing answer as well, and. Well, particularly that aspect that these scenarios or paradigms could be so different according to the field, according to the experience, perhaps according to the dimension. You know, another interview that I thought was really intriguing was your December 2010 interview with Andy Colvin on Mothman. Now, Mike, we have an expert Western researcher here of ICAR, and I know she knows a great deal about the accounts on Mothman. Now, Andy, I know that's a while back here, he really struck me as someone who was very alert and aware to synchronicities and the importance of the subconscious. And it was kind of interesting, too, is we had a recent guest, Fritz Zimmerman, who thought he might have had a glancing encounter with Mothman. What are your feelings on Mothman?
I think it's right in there with that meta-phenomena. It is it's, you know, people, it's being reported too often to dismiss outright. And it's sometimes associated with UFO lore. Sometimes it's associated with like a premonition of something morbid. I know the Fukushima nuclear reactor in the months before the tsunami that happened last year, that there were reports of Mothman that came out later. Those very well could just be an internet hoax, but you know, that is the kind of thing that that's, you know, each one of these phenomena seem to have its own flavor, and it's very interesting that Andy Colvin, you know, he's kind of using the Mothman as kind of the foundation or the axle on the wheel for his other lines of research, because he somehow manages to tie them all in, you know, whether that's Charles Manson or, you know, secret government activities. I don't quite know what to make of his conclusions, though he is a colorful character, and he just has a way of sort of, I don't know how to say it, just as a colorful character, he can just kind of riff on these subjects in a way that I find delightful and sort of fun. I don't have a good idea of, you know, whether to trust or believe in his conclusions, though I certainly, you know, I certainly trust that some of his research would be, you know, proved to be valid. I'm being very cautious to you know, when looking at these subjects.
No, that's understandable. And you know, Mike, I also want to note here your interview with the author and experiencer Kim Carlsberg. You both, in your interview, seem to place great weight on the creative process, also that you thought channeling might be an integral part of research. What will be your current opinion on channeling?
I'm fascinated by channeling. I'm absolutely fascinated. I went through a phase, which I look back now, and, you know, I just like, why did I go through that phase? I went through a phase where I read channeled books, like, compulsively for several years. I have, you know, many dozens of channeled books on my shelves here in the house. She is friends with a fellow named Daryl Anka, who illustrated her first book. Now, Daryl Anka is better known to the world as the voice of Bashar, which is a disembodied alien from the future who is somehow spiritually connected to Bashar. It's his, like, future self. That sounds all very lofty. I don't know whether it's true. What I do know is that there is a consistency with some of this channeled material that I find fascinating. Now, one of the things that's also fascinating by this, fewer things in the UFO research community can make people more irate than bringing up the C word, channeling. And it seems like the vast majority of people who you bring up the channeling, and they will just, like, dismiss it with contempt. And I find that a little bit judgmental, and I think that you need to. Now, if I had a research grant and someone gave me $100 million and I spent the next 10 years researching channeling, I may come to a different conclusion. But at present, I think it's interesting. I think the number of people who UFO contact phenomena and then later go on to say, you know, like, oh, then I started channeling. I just hear that is so common. That just comes up over and over and over again. Oftentimes, the channeling may not be that interesting, or the conduit, who knows? You know, it seems like sometimes the dial is getting more static than signal. But she had an experience with channeling where she said she was channeling for a while, and that's how she actually met Daryl Anka. And I consider Daryl Anka one of the really good voices. He's interesting. Once again, I don't know quite what to make of his stuff, though it is fascinating. I have a close friend that I met through all this nuttiness, and her name is Anya Briggs, and she works as a psychic, and she claims to channel from her spirit guides, and I have done some sessions with her, and the outcome of this channeled sessions, she has said things that were proved to be so uncanny and so directly true. And some of the things that she said almost came out as, I don't want to say, like, almost gook, you know? Like, I would, like, what is she talking about? And then later, I re-listened, took notes, did a little research, and then found that there were unbelievably strange connections to me and some of this stuff that I didn't understand initially. She is also someone who has claims a lot of direct UFO contact. She channels. Daryl Anka claims direct UFO contact, and she channels. And he channels. And then another thing, just that Kim Carlsberg interview, this is something that is very strange. We were doing I might be getting this wrong, and I might be getting some of the details wrong. We were doing the interview, I think, on January 11th, 2011. I might have that wrong. And at a certain point in the interview, both of us were alone in our homes, and both of us, like, someone just walked into the house. I have a friend who lived next door, and he borrowed some ski equipment. He walks into the house, and I just heard him clomping around, you know, on the other side of the house. And in the middle of the interview, I knew it was him. And I shouted out, you know, Phil? And then at the same point in the interview, her roommate that she was living with at the time walked into the house, and his name was also Phil. So both of us go, Phil? And at the same time, and then I want to be cautious, I might be getting some of these details wrong, but and then when you play the edited podcast, the both of us saying Phil comes out at I think 1 hour and 11 minutes and 11 seconds. I think I have that right. So there was this convergence of odd little synchronicities, you know. Once again, you know, like, those synchronicities aren't powerful enough to, you know, start a new religion, but they certainly are a little nudge to say, okay, pay attention. That was one of the highlights to me of that Kim Carlsberg interview, was that odd little synchronicity where we were both mumbling Phil at the same time.
No, it's a great observation. You know, Mike, too, something that really spoke to me, it struck a chord, was the fact that you appreciate the aloneness status of experiences and being a researcher. Would you agree with perhaps many in the public right now still don't appreciate the validity of what they've observed or felt?
Rephrase the question, please, just as far as the actual experiencer feeling alone and feeling like a lack of validation from society?
Yes, and also just being alone in the research at times, and the counterpoint that many people who might similarly have unusual synchronicities or experiences have valid occurrences, but they can't appreciate it. They don't dare to recognize them as valid experiences.
Well, my first response is, like, you know, I just, like, praise the Lord that I started looking into this in 2006 with the advent of the internet, because I don't feel that alone. Because there is a community, albeit, you know, just through through the internet and through, you know, little points of data that show up on my computer. But I feel much less alone. I've made I've had some late night talks with people who found me through the blog, where people are sort of at the same place I am. I feel like cautious. You know, I feel like I'm skeptical in this field, and the one person that I'm most skeptical of is myself, just because I have a hard time believing it. So I've had, sort of late night, heart-to-heart conversations, either on chat rooms or on the phone, with people who describe their own experiences, and they also have that. The experiences are just fleeting enough that they don't know what to trust. There's sort of a continuum, right? So on one end, someone may have just had some odd synchronicity once. And then on another end of the continuum is someone like Whitley Strieber, whose life has been just awash in these experiences. And I don't know where I fit on that continuum. And I think everyone would be placed a little bit different on that continuum. And the further you go in one direction, the harder it is to believe your own experiences. And the further you go in the other direction, I just worry about the sanity of the people at that end of the continuum, just because these, you know, from what I've heard and the very minimal experiences that I've, it seems like it's the kind of thing that can push you over the edge.
Boy, that's powerfully said. And here we have a strong agreement here from our California researcher, Rydell, saying that she too agrees it's a continuum. You know, Mike, with your quest to find that hidden meaning in the synchronicities, through the literature, media, narrative accounts, your excellent research, when I was listening to your interview with Peter Robbins, to me, there was a great similarity between you and Peter. Well, two. Number one, your experiences prompted you to an exciting field of research, but really, it caused you to change careers midstream. And two, you're both artists. What do you think of those two perhaps simplistic observations? What will be your response?
Well, the one is that as far as changing the careers midstream, I haven't really done that. I'm sort of still doing the illustration. I think my illustration work got very slow with the 2008 crash. So and I'm not the only one. So I basically had some free time after that. So some illustration work that I had kept me busy for the years kind of dried up, and then I had a lot of free time, and I kind of threw myself into this other avenue of you know, and that there's something extremely, and I think a lot of people will be able to say this, there is something very compulsive, or the potential for this to be very compulsive in someone's life, or have a very compulsive influence, or, you know, people get obsessed. And I've very much fall into that. And then so does Peter, that you get this you are confronted with a mystery, and a mystery by its very nature, you know, needs to be investigated. And so, you know, and this mystery, I don't know how to say it, maybe it's the mother of all mysteries because it's so elusive. You know, I mean, you know, the only other one out there is, you know, like, is there a God, I guess, is right up there with are there UFOs. You know, so you know, there's that very compulsive side. And then also the creative thing is something I've seen as a pattern. And I made up a little checklist once of, you know, questions I ask people. And one of them was, you know, are you a creative type? And it's not universal, but I find that number of people who respond, you know, who say that, yes, I've had some sort of contact experience, and then they will also respond, yes, I am a creative type. You know, I don't have any concrete data. This is actually something that Joe might be able to have a better answer, or someone, you know, involved in the ICAR, looking at some more data than I'm looking at. But that is something I've definitely seen as a pattern.
Well said. And, you know, I must repeat here that you're an excellent illustrator. I should have said a second career, because you remain an excellent illustrator. And you're also a fine writer, too, about Western topics, such as enjoy the best of the of nature, camping. You really have, you're a Renaissance type. You have several expertises, extensive knowledge in a couple of fields there. So good for you.
And I picked the single fields that so I should show you my bank account sometime, I picked the fields that pay the least but have the very strong rewards. Let me put it that way.
Exactly, and for you, strong achievements. Now, you know, Mike, I'm sighing here. Mike, one aspect too that I really heartily agree with both you and you and Peter Robbins. You both admire the work left at Eastgate. I did as well. I think Peter Robbins and Larry Warren just did an excellent work with left at Eastgate. I guess the full term, left at Eastgate, the full title rather, a first-hand account of the Bentwaters Woodsbury UFO incident, its cover-up, an investigation. Outstanding book. And, you know, I have to admire Larry for being such a strong advocate in a field which takes no quarter when ufologists duel over concepts and events. Do you find that upsetting, that so often there is such strong diatribe and disputes over different concepts in these fields?
It's like being, I'm not sure whether it's a snake pit or like the sandbox of the kindergarten. People get like so volatile. And I feel like, I don't know what it is about me, but I feel like I'm more interested in the sociological aspects of it too. For instance, someone who I have spoken about, and I feel like I can do it in a way that, you know, is, even keeled, is Stephen Greer. I find his conclusions and his presentation of his conclusions very challenging. I find that I'm very skeptical of his overall conclusions. That said, I think it would be a disservice to the overall phenomena to throw the baby out with the bathwater and dismiss everything he says outright just because, something about him rubs me the wrong way. There's some stuff that he's done that deserves a little, some merit, and then even some of the more controversial things that he's done, like, I've talked to some people who've been on his, where they try to bring in contact with laser beams in the ESETI, I don't want to say curriculum. Do you know what am I asking?
Yes, indeed. And I think, to me, your words recall the fact that they have a very strong protocol aspect, if I'm not mistaken. Actually, here, I'm generalizing. I wish I knew more about the CSETI group.
But and it's interesting because it's sort of mired in secrecy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that just makes me skeptical, for a good reason, I think. I think it's completely appropriate to be skeptical in something that's sort of mired in that kind of secrecy. That said, I think a bunch of people going out into the woods with some laser beams at night, all with the single-minded focus, the intention to see UFOs, I feel strongly they probably are getting results. I've talked to some people who have had very strange experiences on those forays into the night with Stephen Greer. The backstabbing and the sniping I think that's true of any organization. You know what I mean? I'm sure, like, if I went to a plumber's convention, the folks there would also be sort of whispering and pointing fingers and grumbling at each other in a way that would seem a little bit like kids in the playground being mean to each other. The only thing that's different about the UFO lore is that it's just so bizarre that these things can get a little more theatrical, let me put it that way.
Their points, and, Mike, just very quickly on those, I do know the CSETI protocol, or I believe they use that laser pointer to try to initiate contact, and one of the researchers from California, a really charming guy, Preston Dennett, has had luck with that. So has Neil Gould, the expert director from Hong Kong, twice being able to, or family members being able to elicit craft response. It's been rather startling for them.
Is it the laser pointer, or is it just the intention of the person? I mean, could the person have gone out with a candle and gone through the same, deep intention and gotten the same results? I don't have a good answer to that.
That's a valid point as well. It's a strong point as well. Interestingly, we might bring a laser pointer to the International UFO Congress just, around the hotel, or our hotel. I have mixed feelings on that, actually. But we do have about 2 minutes left, and, Mike, I'd love to have you just mention what most excites you now about the field. Will you be going to the conference as well?
I will be at the conference, yes, so I will see you.
Excellent, excellent. Do you feel optimistically that the research field, whether in the paranormal arena, ufology, or ET subject matters, is progressing at this point, and that field followers, field researchers, field advocates are beginning to appreciate the importance of individual viewpoint and sincere research?
Well, I think what's happened is the Internet has taken over in a way that I think has surprised everyone. One of the things that's happened is, and this is something I follow closely, is people's first-person writings. And they are blossoming on the Internet where there's sort of a one after another seems to be appearing in online where people are sharing their first-hand experiences. And so what's happening to me is it's this sort of overall phenomena is less controlled by, you know, esteemed researchers putting out a book every few years, and it seems to be that the fun stuff, let me put it that way, the really interesting, bizarre, you know, stuff is being instead reported, you know, oftentimes you know, there's some very good writers out there, but sometimes people are sort of sloppy writers, but there's a passion in that, and it is showing up in these first-person narratives that are online, you know, often in real time in blogs. So that is, to me, really fascinating, that there's a shift. You know, the grassroots stories are just as immediate. You know, someone on their laptop can get up in the morning after an odd event, take a picture of an odd mark on their, you know, on their body, post it on their blog, and then anyone in the planet can access that without any trouble. It's only a few mouse clicks away from well, I mean, anyone that is.
Joe, do we still have Mike on the line? Mike? While we're getting Mike right back on the line, I just wanted to mention again how right he is about the Internet being a catalyst for research and information and dissemination of data on these fields.
These
great, Mike.
So, yes.
Hi, I just wanted to say again what a great point that is on the Internet being a catalyst for research and dissemination of information on these important fields, and your website is an excellent example of a source of information and communication about these matters at hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. Now, Mike, we really have been enjoying on the network hearing your fine interviews. We hope to hear more of them. And I hope you'll agree to be a return guest and also to let us be able to broadcast more of your excellent interviews. Joe, are we back again?
I'm here. I can hear you.
Great. I guess the Internet is locking up again. Please, I hope you'll consider being a return guest to the program, Mike. We've really appreciated this. And also, I'm going to look forward to hearing more of your excellent interviews on the network. Hope you have a great weekend there.
Thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you and saying hello in Arizona in just a little less than a month.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, great Friday, great weekend, and thanks also to our listeners. Your time with us is appreciated. And also thanks to our room visitors and researchers. Your contributions, too, were excellent, much appreciated. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Damaging to your lungs. And this person said that...
Thanks, everyone, for joining us this evening on A Global Focus with guest Mike Cleland. We appreciate your time with us and wish you a great weekend.
Of cigarette tobacco would have, and that smoking it was not the way to go. What do you think about that?